My name is Lawrence Kimball Cook. This is about disruption, innovation, the latest prop tech, and maybe some bad jokes. So tune in now to EG Radio to hear more.
So Lawrence, it's been about a year, I think, since last we saw you. What have you been doing, starring in hip hop videos?
Yeah, I've been trying to, you know, get out there and take myself to the world of MTV bass and get in hip hop videos. So yeah, we've been doing that with a collaboration with Akon. We powered a soccer pitch in Nigeria, and off the back of it, they said, you're gonna be in a hip hop video. So I was getting ready, I got my chain out, I've been practicing my dance moves. But the sad news is they only put me in the back of the video doing some drawing, but I've definitely got what it takes to do another one. So if anyone's doing a hip hop video out there, I'm your guy, definitely.
Is it only hip hop or will you do any genre?
What do you think I'd be suitable for? I mean, are we thinking some kind of like EDM dance video, sway my arms around? What do you think would be best for me?
I was thinking more Little Mix.
Oh God, okay. Well, I'll take your lead on it. You can curate it and I'll just do whatever you guys send me. Maybe the Estates Gazette could do a theme tune, a Christmas anthem.
Oh, EG.
Yeah.
Changed our name, we're all trendy now.
Oh, the EG. Yeah. So it's like a kind of the new street version.
Yeah. We basically are a hip hop
song. It's like our V3.
Well, people can't actually see what you guys look like that right now, but you guys are both wearing hip hop attire. So, I mean, I think it may not seem like it, but these guys are the most street EG group you're ever going to see.
I feel like I'm hip hop from 1990 though, a bit of crisscross.
Basically, I'd be all about the old school. It's all about, I used to actually, in my previous life, at age 16, was a hip-hop DJ for about a year. So that was a big part of my early years, was playing with old-school hip-hop records, which is what I think everyone should have done at some point.
And it's one easy hip-hop and a jump. Skip-hop and a jump, isn't it, really? But from music to tiles, floor tiles.
That was seamless.
That's right. And if you use the energy of my dance moves, there wouldn't be much, because it's not very good dancing. I'm quite good at awkwardly shifting my weight from my left foot to my right foot at a very slow beat. So watch out for me on the dance floor, to the lady listeners out there. Sorry.
This is real estate, so there's okay, not many
yes.
of them. But
oh, yeah.
There we go. But in all seriousness, tell us a little bit about what PaveGen's been up to over the last year.
So we're in serious mode now, and PaveGen, so look, we make these floors that generate energy from your footsteps. I've been an engineer and a designer developing this for the past few years now, and what's been really exciting for us is we've just launched the V3 version of our product. What it does is when you stand on it, it generates energy. We've made it really easy to install. We've made it much better to install outside. We've brought on board a new way of generating data that allows people to understand how people are moving in cities. And it starts to give really great insight to real estate developers, to owner managers, and people in charge of facilities or properties from the data from a tile. So we've been really busy. So what have we done? The first thing is we took our technology to the heart of Washington, D.C. So we closed a contract with the federal US government. We installed it on the same day as Trump was inaugurated. So there's a very unhappy man in the White House right now, because outside the White House, we have an array of our tiles. Now what these tiles are doing, there's over 350 square foot tiles. What it's doing is the energy is being generated and stored in batteries and used to power the lights right in the heart of Washington, D.C. So suddenly we've got 10,000 people a day, and we've got a people-powered city, and we're doing it in one of the most tough environments known to man. It gets really cold in DC, so it's been a great test of our product. It's been in since the end of last year, but it's also kicking data up to the cloud. So we can see, for example, when the Women's March happened, we have a great amount of data about how many people are there. I'm not allowed to, and unfortunately, Trump has put me under a gagging order, so I can't release the data that we're getting, but we're getting a really great insight into how people are moving in these smart areas. So I think it's been a huge moment for us.
Were there more women there that day than there were people there for his inauguration?
See, that's the million-dollar question.
That's the billion-dollar question.
I will consult my legal documentation around what we can get out there. But ultimately, imagine if these tiles were everywhere, you'd suddenly have this insight. And the simplest way is, you know, like helping councils to know when there'll be lots of people to clean a street. But then the other side of the spectrum is you can actually get a granular insight into not only how many people are moving at what time, but we can actually tell you who's been moving at what time. And then that gives you really great insights for things like, you know, retailers, in shopping malls. And that takes me on to like our next thing is, it's about to go into, and this has been a huge moment for us, is Westfield Stratford City. And so it's one of the busiest, you know, shopping centres in Europe. 35 million people a year move through it. And this quarter, we'll be installing our tiles there in the entrance. So as you come out of the... Do you guys go shopping in Westfield ever?
I have been to Stratford.
I have also been to Stratford.
Is that where you can be found on a Saturday? Do you like to go down there?
No, but we do have some people on the team who live in the East Village near Stratford, so we'll ask them.
So if we ask them, what they probably say is, it is the busiest place on earth on a Saturday morning. I'm not saying it's my most favourite place to be on a Saturday morning. However, it is a wonderful place to go shopping. But it's the footfall we're getting in Westfield is going to be so great that we're going to be able to power some of the entrance lighting as people walk in. So it's 35 million people a year walking there, and every step they take will be on a paved end tile. So for us, that's like a massive new development that's going in there in such a premier location. So for us, it's a start of really showing how we can change the face of retail through, yes, energy, but engaging people, making it fun, making it more of an experience, making people want to go to that destination rather than just clicking on the internet and buying it online, you know, making it fun.
So will they know they're standing on paved gentiles, or will it just look like the entrance to Stratford?
So they'll know they're walking on it. We'll make a big deal about it, okay. Make it really visual. You mentioned earlier, I think you may have been insulting my dance skills about the hop, skip and a jump, but imagine the idea of a hopscotch where people can play on the tiles and you can actually gamify it. And one of the things we learned early on is that generating energy is obviously, you know, really important. You know, I think smart cities of the future will have like a decentralized power source. But you've got to make it fun. If it's not fun, people won't engage in it. So ultimately, I think that education, making things fun, making it part of an experience, are what's going to make retail really stand out, to make our high streets come alive again. But people have to take ownership of it. We can't just leave it to governments of the world to apparently solve all our problems. And let's just say that in America, it's not going so well right now. But if we get it right, it could be a huge real change for society.
Can you see Donald Trump hopscotching a long paved journey outside the White House?
Well, I think I'd like to. I think the memes that would come out of that would be fantastic. And you know, he drives underneath our installation every day when he's in the White House. He goes past it. So you know, whether he likes it or not, he is part of that, which is you know, let's get him involved.
And you've also got an installation coming just off Oxford Street in the summer as well, is that right, on Bird Street?
Yeah, so Bird Street is the road that is right next door to Selfridges on Oxford Street. And in partnership with the New West End Group, with funding from Transport for London, we've got an installation that will be going in this quarter, so actually before, well, I guess, yes, at the beginning of summer, and it's going to be the largest array we've ever done in the UK. The other array we've got is in Heathrow Airport, in T3. When you go up and down, have you guys walked on it before? Have you flown out of T3?
No, I keep flying out. It makes me sound awful.
Yeah, sorry, of course, one of busy days.
Sorry. Flying out of T5, and I've been looking for it each time, but haven't seen it, because it's in T3.
Well, it's next to it. It's in T3. It's next to the Burberry shop, so I'm not sure how fair you are with that. I'm always running around the Burberry shop. It's the best place to be.
I need a significant pay rise.
Well, I'm always in the Zara shop.
This is Zara, and yeah, this coat has its own Instagram account.
Oh wow,
it's so overworn.
Well, if you can't see what's going on in the studio right now, we're just comparing labels in our different fashion garments. But the good news is we've only gone down to our blazers. We're not playing the pant game, because that can be very embarrassing. But on more serious stuff.
That's on episode 3.
Yeah, because watch out, the unedited version will come out. It's the good pants, bad pants.
E.g. uncut.
Yeah, so I think it may have happened at the Estates Gazette dinner. You just have to guess if someone's wearing good pants or bad pants.
E.g. Lawrence,
yes, E.g. E.g. Sorry, I'm not on brand here. I'm getting smashed over the head by head of comms, so I'll have to make sure I get on brand more for that. But seriously, is the thing I'm really excited about, other than E.g. and the fantastic things that are going on with the...
Right, it rhymes with T3.
T3, E.g. is so at Oxford Street, it's going to be the most high profile thing we've ever done. So we've got, you know, 200,000 people a day moving through Oxford Street, and the interesting thing we're going to do with it is, I think at the moment, is we're going to be powering the lights on the street, and we're also going to be, because it's Bird Street, we're going to be powering bird song. So as you walk along in at night time, not only will you have the lights powered, but you'll also have The ability to hear some bird noise.
So we freaked out by an owl.
Yeah, I mean, maybe an owl will just kind of suddenly come out and squawk loudly and scare you as you walk down it. But I think ultimately for us, this is our biggest proof point in London. It comes at a really big inflection point for the business. So we want to make it fun. Ultimately, it'll be secret, like paved in tiles. You know, soon we'll have our aim is to put 1 million tiles in every city so that cities have an off-grid, decentralized power source, and they can all be run through the energy of people's steps. And it'll work alongside other technologies, but if we make it fun and engaging, it will really help the launch that we're trying to do. So expect Sadiq Khan cutting the ribbon in a few months' time there. So you guys are going to come down. Maybe we could do another radio interview with some more background noise, I admit, on Oxford Street, of the installation when it's live.
There'll be a bird song.
We could do some bird song in the background as well.
Or we could dance.
I think we've just invented a new EG rap battle with bird song.
Yes, EG, the song. Well,
so I think it's going to start and be great. So yeah, that's happening soon. And I think for us, it's like we're also going to be running some really interesting stuff on top of that that will be around engaging people for advertising. I can't talk much more about it, but I think that there's another way we can start to monetize these eyeballs. I think ultimately that if you look at what Snapchat have done for eyeballs and how they can engage many millennials, we can turn every footstep into an eyeball that can look at different content and different platforms. So if you imagine advertising powered by people, we're almost starting to do that in a way that people really want to be engaged with. And I can talk more about that later on.
Yeah,
I might be being really slow there, but when you say what Snapchat have done to engage eyeballs, what does that mean exactly?
So Snapchat is valued at multi billions of revenue. Now, they have that huge valuation because they have millions of eyeballs. They have millions of young millennial eyeballs, which are incredibly valuable for brands to engage
with. You mean people looking, users?
Yeah. I see. Yeah, sorry. So eyeballs is a user observing their mobile phone. I sometimes call these screen agers, you know, the generation who will just stare at their mobile device and that's all they do. And these are an incredibly aware but very important demographic for brands to target. So you've got these Snapchat that is, you know, incredibly valuable platform, but then actually we're getting exactly those kind of people walking our tiles, and we have a platform that can allow us to talk to those people and engage with them and find out more about what they want and what their beliefs are that can actually make property work in a much more interesting space, especially retail. And it might sound crazy, but I had a few beers with a guy called Jeff Martin a few years ago. Now, this guy called Jeff Martin happened to be the guy that was talking to Steve Jobs in 1990. And he goes, Steve, I think MP3s are going to be a good idea. And I guess together and with the whole Apple team, they came up with iTunes. So Jeff was a really big part of that. So he's really an expert in multimedia and entertainment digital design. And he went on to create a company that founded Polyphonic Ringtones. So I'm sure you guys listened to your hip-hop anthems on your polyphonic ringtones when you were on the bus, when you were younger. Do you remember that on the buses? I think there's nothing more frustrating than polyphonic ringtones, but they did define an era. Now, what we've done is we've created a digital currency that sits on a PaveGen tile. So as you walk over the tile with your phone, let's say you're walking into the Selfridges, you get points on your mobile device. And it would say, hey, Lawrence, you've generated 55 steps. Now, you powered the lights in Bird Street, but with those 55 steps, would you like to donate those steps to either a cause that's important to you, or would you like some money off your purchases? So suddenly, as I'm walking into Selfridges, I'm getting a discount on my purchase because I've helped them generate energy. But two is, it's really important to align these millennials with causes that are important. So, for example, we're working with one of the largest banks in the US, and we're doing a rock tour. So sadly, rock music, not hip hop, as readers will be upset to, or listeners will be upset to hear. But one of the rock bands travels the US, brands will be able to sponsor the floor that will allow people's footsteps to actually go and donate their energy to local schools, or donate to charities in say India and actually make social impact. And the whole thing is you're getting the eyeball, the engagement of the young consumers, but you're getting that engagement in a really positive way to create advocacy. Because I don't know about you guys, but I don't look at billboards anymore and really observe them. If I see a billboard telling me how great an energy brand is, it means zero to me. They actually need to do something different. And we've learned a lot about that. And we believe we can change the vision of consumers in public realm through the kind of tiles, not only being an energy source, but also a data source too.
that's quite a lot to take in.
It's a big vision here. You know, we've got some really big plans that for Paveden in the future.
I've never seen Sam unable to sort of follow up with a question, and certainly I don't think we've both ever sat there and been like,
But I guess it's, you know, when we've spoken before, you said the tile's not smart. It's you know, it's not smart until someone walks over it.
We're gonna have to just comment that you're eating nuts.
I mean nuts. We're sitting here in the wonderful EG studio, which has had a multi-million-pound refit at 4 in the afternoon, and I haven't had my lunch, so I was just trying to have a cashew nut on the side there, and I got spotted playing with cashews. But anyway, where were we? I've lost my trail of thought.
We're on data, and the tiles not being smart for people to walk over them that makes them sort of valuable. And I guess is the balance of whether they're a kinetic tile that creates energy, or whether they're a tile that provides data. What's the most important? And I guess from a real estate perspective, from a smart cities perspective, how does that sort of play into that?
Yeah, so I mean, a Paveden tile, it's just a dumb tile. People make it smart. So we found a tool that can like empower a community through the power of a step. And the first way of looking at that is saying, well, we can put solar on every single building. One, no one will see that, and no one will understand it. We can put wind on every building. There's no way to really engage with your customers, with your stakeholders around what you're doing with renewables. So that's the first reason where you can almost hug a Paveden tile. I mean, you can't hug a wind turbine, you'd be turned to mincemeat, but you know, you can almost hug a Paveden. So we're making people involved in it. Now, if you look at the renewable energy industry, in early, you know, 2009, 2010, 11, 12, hundreds of these solar companies went bust. They all claimed to try and get the cost per watt to sub $3. And you know, they were getting energy super cheap, but they failed. Why did they fail? Well, not everyone wants to put a huge solar array on their roof. It's a real pain to do. Why is every roof in the world not covered in solar panels? I mean, why not? And I think it's more than just energy. And what we're doing at Paveden is we offer an energy solution. We can offer an off-grid power source that can power the lights on the street, the entrance to an office. You know, it won't power the whole city, but it can take parts of it off-grid. But on top of that, we're offering this functionality that allows smart cities to come alive. So like, I believe the smart city of the future will be one where it makes people happy. You know, cities will be the new front line with thousands of people flooding to London. I'm sure you've got better data than this, but you know, three train carriages a day flood to London of people. And there's not enough property to keep up with the rising demand. And ultimately, my commute to work, actually I cycle. Do you get the tube to work?
I get the train.
You get the train.
And then a bus.
And do you get to sit on the train?
No.
You squeeze like a sardine against the window.
Until I took that bus into London on a weekend, which is about 7 months after I moved into my flat, I didn't even realise that it went past Battersea Power Station, because I was so wedged in. Yeah. I can't see.
So your face was squashed against, you know, a sweaty man's like back, probably. It usually happens to me when I get on a bus in the summer. I'm not saying I'm sure you'd avoid that, but I'm always the guy that is stuck against a sweaty person. And so look, the transport is going to be even tougher, and these cities are the new front line where we've got to be happy. And in a 20 years time, London is going to be a completely different place. I mean, great, we've got Nine Elms coming online, we've got some of these small developments, but it's not anywhere near enough what we need. And I think the cities need to be places where people can live harmoniously in them, even though it's busier. So things like, we can reduce crowding through understanding how people are moving with Paveden tiles. That's one way. We can cheer someone up as you walk to work by giving you content that can say, well, look, I'm actually making a difference to this world through my footsteps. And so it's about improving that area. So I think that
you've done so many steps. Hey, you're great.
Yeah,
you just saved the planet.
Yeah, high five to you.
We were talking earlier, actually. Have you heard of the Conscious Cities Conference that's happening at the beginning of May, which is using neuroscience and the concepts behind neuroscience to make cities happier, healthier, more well-orientated places?
Very interesting. Wow, I'd love to find out more about that, because I know there's a gentleman I used to work called Bo Lotto, who was a neuroscientist.
Great name.
I have seen him speaking, and he is amazing.
He's
absolutely
a hero.
Incredible.
Bo, if you're out there, you need to come in and see us and be part of the next show.
I saw you at the Royal Institute and you were brilliant.
So I think he did a project in Old Street a while ago, years ago. It was about making these solar floors. I think it got taken out. There was a really great experiment about like what kind of colours stimulated people, what kind of like lights would make people feel better. And he was doing some amazing work, and he's a really great thought leader. But I guess that idea of, you know, neural networks and finding what people want is a great way to make their cities better. better, because I don't like cities. I think all of us, like, if we could live in greenery, and you know when you open a window and on a weekend and you're in the countryside, there's that amazing feeling where you're like, oh, this is great. And you know, my view of 10 foot out my bedroom window into a brick wall is wonderful where I am in Brixton, but like, it doesn't make me feel great. So I think we've got to find other ways to cheer people up in cities. So back to your original question, Sam, around, you know, why, what is it around, you know, paving that's being used by the real estate industry? Is one, it's energy, you know, two, it's happiness, and three, it's data. And all those things mean that it's just a really easy product to use, and it can win on all different fronts. So it can make your head of facilities happy, it can make the head of energy happy, but then also your marketing and comms people can also be happy because suddenly they've got a highly engaged group around them. I'm just choking on a cashew here. Excuse me.
Just came up again. The danger of eating cashews on a podcast.
That's it. Well, I'm still alive, just about here.
Just like our recording device, which is fine, by the way. Do you continue?
So, are there any cities? I think we're going to talk a bit later about a smart cities partnership between London and Copenhagen. I know you're off there soon to run a little bit.
Yeah.
But have you been there from a work perspective and looked at what they're doing with smart cities or town planning, or could we see PaveGen in Copenhagen anytime soon?
Well, yeah, funny you said that. I was there on Thursday. So for Copenhagen, yeah, it's amazing what's going on there. Obviously, you've got...
I just want to say Copenhagen, which
that,
I know.
Oh, that's it. Maybe that's a new brand that we launched there, Copenhagen. I think because PaveGen, Pavigan is what people sometimes say. And I think when I first started the company, there was a Norwegian trucking company called PaveGen. And so they were, obviously, we cut them to pieces with our legal team. No, we didn't really. We
Norwegians are so chilled out and laid back, they probably didn't even notice.
Yeah, we fully support their trucking business. It was great. But I think what we're seeing in Copenhagen is smart city initiatives that I was really impressed with things like traffic lights that work for cyclists. So actually all the lights would come on as you go down the street. And it would mean that, I don't know about you, but it really frustrates me stopping and starting all the time as a cyclist, especially at 8 in the morning. It doesn't help Strava. I mean, you know, we're going for some big data some days, and you've got to make sure you get the right amount. But smart cities are being used for things like, so today's a good day. I'm 31 kilometers in normally of getting through. I'm showing where I've been today. So I've just been doing a big loop all over. I've gone to East London and Central. But Strava is being used for things like city planning, for making it more efficient for cycle paths and where people go through. But I think, so yeah, Copenhagen's taking great steps. The airport's going to have loads of change there, but they are really forward thinking. I think they're design led, and I'd argue maybe they're more design and experimental, like more of an experimental focus out there. I'm not sure if you've ever heard about the city of Malmo.
Yeah.
Do you know much about what's going on in Malmo?
I know a little bit about what's going on in Malmo, but not as much to be able to talk about it confidently, so I'm going to hand over back to you.
Well, okay, so I'm there with the city's head designer, and there aren't many, it's not a very big city, but there aren't many, like, it's not often that a city or town has just a lead, like, head of lighting design. And we walk up this bridge, and he goes, hey, look at this, Lawrence, this is cool. And he pulls out his laptop, and he starts controlling the bridge, and he makes the bridge, like, spell out, welcome, Lawrence. And the whole city is controlled. All the lighting is, like, installation-led, but also designed to be configured to make it all different. And the whole thing is like an experiment. He was literally, the experience of walking around Malmo, to me, was like walking around a fun fair with the head of the fun fair just playing with stuff and making it cool. So they've got all sorts of animated things, solar-powered street lights, like everything's designed to engage and enhance experience, especially in retail. It felt more like an art gallery going around one of their main retail sites. So I think they're really forward-thinking from a design-led point. London, there's a lot of challenges here, so it's never going to be exactly the same. And there's a lot of talk around smart cities, and I think it's great to see TfL, you know, putting their hand in their pocket and committing to some real innovation, unlike, you know, rather than just talking about it. Because I've sat there with the head advisor to Sadiq Khan, or to, I think it was previous to Boris, and they said, look, London is going to be a test bed, a living lab for smart cities. And like, we didn't quite see it. You know, we heard it, and we clapped, and we talked about it with it, but it didn't really see it. It wasn't really delivered. So I think hopefully now we can maybe listen to the other European cities that maybe are accelerating out of London and help to make a big difference here.
We've got the likes of, we did an interview recently with Future City about, you know, who are trying to, I think, trying to infiltrate a little bit of, you know, that Malmö spirit into London with like the Bridges project, the Bridges lighting project, and bringing kind of AI artwork to buildings and to trying to embed culture into huge projects and also existing infrastructure. So maybe we'll see a little bit of a speed change on that.
Definitely. I was up with the wonderful folks at KPMG who've been doing some property technology events up in Manchester the other week. And the interesting thing was I was listening to the CTO or head of innovation for Cisco, a guy called Nick, and he was amazing talking about, you know, all the smart technologies in there, you know, Wi-Fi for all, like kind of all the standard stuff. And then he was like, you know what, we need lots of public art. Like we need lots of engaging fun art. And it's everyone's really getting to grasp with the fact that we've got to make cities these fun interactive places. It's not like you got to make a ghost town that's got like great energy. You got to make it fun. And I think the top people with a big budget to spend, the government people, they're starting to listen to it being playful, especially as I guess the majority of people moving to cities are millennials. And we ultimately demand, one, to work for companies that are socially responsible and have this great social purpose. But two, like playfulness is almost in our culture and we don't want to stop that. And I know that I think the more you stop being playful, the more corporate you get, you just stop being creative and it's just time to, I don't know, get old and die maybe. I'm not sure, but I'm really keen to keep that playfulness going, especially in my organization, to keep people thinking differently and being, you know, fun and creative about all their ideas.
So apart from your own business, of course, what do you think is the coolest piece of tech that's relevant to real estate, I guess, out there at the moment?
Yeah, the things I've been looking at, I love what the guys have been doing with air monitoring with pigeons. Plume Labs, I don't know if you come across that. These guys are getting networks of pigeons, putting a air quality monitor on it and let the pigeons roam. And then you can aggregate their data and suddenly you've got like really hyper-focused array of pollution data. So, you know, pigeons could be the answer.
Is amazing.
And I'm going to hook them up to power, pigeon power. I mean, maybe that could be the next thing.
Pigeons are it's actually a really nice twist of fate for the pigeons because they're seen as sort of quite...
They are vermin.
No, they are vermin. But now if they have a use, maybe that will see
Let's
them
put
rise
them to work.
The
pigeon power.
Should we get, do you want to go out with me and we'll try and fit some of these pollution monitors to pigeons in Trafalgar Square?
Absolutely.
I'm not sure the police will say to us, but
That's
maybe we could actually put them to use them out there. And then, I mean, other things
that
we're
looking
to... I can
only see that ending badly, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a fun challenge. Maybe we need to get the TV channel up there, putting stuff out there. And then other things I'm really into, I was really impressed with the guys from Wonderwall who have created a light switch that has more data and more intelligence than I've ever seen in a consumer product for the home. So for example, it'll monitor the air quality, it will do what Nest did, and when you get home, it can turn the lights on, turn the heating on in your house. And then even if you get burgled and it hears smashed glass, the lights start flashing. So it's like this, so obviously it's a great deterrent to stop people, but it's this smart switch, like hub, that can really do everything in your home, where I truly believe Nest failed with the smart learning thermostat. So they've been really cool. So we're looking at lots of different technologies at the moment. I'm really into smart payments right now. I don't know, that's not quite real estate, but it does overlap.
I've seen you on Instagram with your special ring.
Yeah, so
to speak.
I love this. Yeah. Well, I have a wonderful ring that is this. No, it's an NFC ring. So I don't know about you guys, but when I've got my bags and I'm, especially when I'm going to an airport and I've got to get on the underground, I hate having to rifle through my wallet, try and find the awful card, whatever my payment card is, and tap it on the surface. Whereas I have a ring now that I can just tap on the tube and do my payments. And whenever I go to Marks and Spencer's, I can just tap my fist on the receiver and my payment's made.
I thought you were a Zara man.
Well, Marks and Spencer's for, you know, if you've got to go in and get a snack on the road. Uh-huh. You know, I'm trying not to eat carbs at the moment, so I'm having to buy all sorts of weird and wacky things to keep me going there. But it's also amazing the reception you're getting. I've never had 6 or 7 people behind the cash register be like amazed. And they're like, what is this? I've never seen this technology. But it's changing the way payments happen. I never want to carry a wallet. And I think that if you look at what Amazon have done with the smart shop, where you don't need, it will just identify the products you buy through a camera, well then actually, you can just, oh, in a way it's like shoplifting, but legitimate. You can just take everything, put it in your bag, it knows what you've got, it knows your account, eventually your biometric fingerprint will be all it needs. Maybe it will just scan your retina.
All the thrill, no prison.
That's it, yeah. All the rush of running out of shop with security chasing you. Maybe they'll offer that service and you can just get the buzz. I'm not condoning shoplifting to our wonderful EG listeners. Just I do have the receipt for my prep purchase, just to prove it.
And Emily was talking earlier to James Disley about what's really annoying him or what he's really getting bored of in tech. Is there anything that bores you?
Yeah. What bores you?
What bores? Wow. Okay.
My new favourite question, I think.
Yeah, it's a good one. I mean, okay. So one, I've been over at South by Southwest, which is the biggest tech festival in the world. Yeah, I'm just dropping it. Well, I was really lucky to be supported by the Department for International Trade, who you know, they've been great for helping us expand globally. You've done over 200 projects around the world now. So they invited me out as an ambassador for the UK government. Now we're up against two companies for this massive innovation award, and the first one was a company called Otto, who got acquired by Uber. So these are driverless trucks, amazing, amazing company. And then the next one was Starship Technologies. I don't know if you come across them. They deliver your, if you get a Chinese takeaway on a Saturday night, they send out a delivery drone. It's like a big remote control car. It drives to your front door. It opens up, you enter in a PIN code, and you can remove your Chinese dinner without the need of delivery drivers clogging up the streets. And lots of pollution, and obviously a lot less cost. So these two amazing companies, you know, Skype founders started Starship Technologies, and Uber have acquired Otto. So we were up against this competition. We thought, let's not even bother going to the event because we're never going to win. And anyway, we ended up beating both these two tech leviathans over there, and so that was amazing for us.
We
were really,
a great word, yeah.
really keen to kind of be part of that. But what it meant is at South by there was so much tech there. There's this IoT theme and the internet connected, you know, you've got ad tech, you know, fintech, clean tech, ed tech,
prop tech.
There's yeah, obviously prop tech is the best, you know. She's kicking me under the table, it's getting violent here. But there's so many kinds of prop tech out there that I'm almost like about to see this internet enabled umbrella that only works outside, that detects when it's raining. I mean, there's so much like naff, like products being IoT enabled just for the sake of it. I think I've seen about 7 IoT mirrors, and I don't know how much about you guys, but I don't really need my news and my mirror in the morning. I think we need to calm down a little bit about this kind of idea of disruptive innovation being by internet enabling every device we've got. I think that we need to do it in a really smart way to make it empower people's lives, but you can't just go for a checklist of products and then internet enable them. I think let's look at healthcare, and that could be a great application. So if you're going to IoT anything, make sure that it has a real reason to it, is my motto today.
It's a good lesson.
It's a great lesson.
What would you internet enable if you could? Ooh, if you had to internet enable anything?
I don't know if I can answer that right now, just because I'm not used to being asked questions on this podcast or ever really. What would you internet enable?
I would want...
Is that the right question?
I guess everything that I would want has been done, because it would be, sport related. Mm. So... I'd want something on my butt. I guess I'd want Garmin to do something better that was internet enabled. But I don't know, yeah. That's why we're not, you know, referred to as boy geniuses. One, because we're not boys.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
because,
good, yeah.
Because we're not geniuses.
Well, okay.
I'm speaking for myself and Emily.
Well, I do remember actually.
No.
We do have a. So Sam mentions that apparently someone in the media, who I obviously had to bribe, called me a boy genius once. But I think we are in the presence of a girl genius. Now, I'm not sure if we want to regale the story, but you know, years ago,
this day, I feel terrible about this.
The wonderful one of the wonderful events I went to with the YEP, Young Entrepreneurs in Property, who are a great, great group. They invited me along to do a talk, and I was so excited about this. I planned for weeks.
Don't. I feel dreadful.
I planned for months, and this was in the early days of my career, where you know I got this huge opportunity to tell my story, and you know, so my mum was really excited, my dad was really excited about it. We really couldn't wait for it. So I go to this event. I wrote a poem. I'm not a very, I'm not a particularly poetic guy, but I spent a long time, weeks, maybe months, writing this poem. And so I told a poem about my story to try and have some impact at this event.
That's a great
and there was this very witty, editor. Are you an editor?
Bright
editor who happened to turn the evening into a poetry battle, and within about 3.5 minutes wrote a poem that was better than mine and recited back to me. And so then I tried to write a poem and it didn't work. There were too many swear words in it, and I left the evening very upset. But we've made friends now.
Yeah.
But it was an excellent poem. Do you want to recite it for the audience?
Do you know, if I could remember it or still had it, I would, but I felt so dreadful about the whole thing, I deleted it, never to be thought of again.
What about a haiku? Can you give us a haiku for the EG audience now?
Really, genuinely wait. Don't think
we
I can.
Can we try one? I mean,
it's look. Like we've come full circle back to yeah. the hip-hop.
So maybe me and Sam can small talk for a bit. You can think of a quick poem.
Remind me of, but, of how a haiku works.
Well, a haiku has to have the same amount of syllables in the second part of the third, and it has to be really short, like 16 words, I'm guessing. That's going back to my A-level English.
35 minutes into a podcast, we might lose some people if we try and do a haiku.
You can't give the people what they want. We're getting thousands of texts coming in. There's people banging the door for this haiku.
I tell you what, I'll have a think, and I will recite a haiku at the beginning of the next
episode three.
Either a haiku or a limerick.
Okay, well, just to remind you, I've actually remembered now. A haiku is a Japanese poem of 17 syllables in three lines or of 5, 7, and 5, and traditionally evoking images of the natural world. So maybe
when you say just remembered, obviously we can see that you've just Googled it.
Yeah, but the people
that was an internet-enabled.
Yeah, that was an internet-enabled memory. But we look forward to the haiku championships.
Thank you,
that will start.
And again, I apologise for what I did. I think it was really quite mean. And to finish off, can I just ask? We talked about this with James Dearsley. Which of these words do you least offend you the least? Synergy or disruption?
Good question. I'm thinking. I guess disruption, because we were part of the Maserati 100 last week, where I identified the top 100 disruptive people. And you've got to appreciate some of these things. So I guess it's part of our, I guess, what we've created here. And if we're nice about disruption in Maserati, I'm hoping they lend me a car for a weekend. So obviously shout out to the Maserati.
Just give you a car.
Well, yeah, I tried that one. I don't think they're too keen on it. But I think, look, disruption is used a lot, but I think that you've got to appreciate real disruption for what it's worth. You know, look what Uber did. Look at what a building management system did that internet-enabled a BMI of a building. Super boring, yes, but actually it can really start to change buildings in a huge way. So I'm really up for disruption, but synergy is just used like a million times. I think I've heard it 100 times today. Maybe we could use that word in your poem.
I'm already thinking like...
Synergy, three syllables.
I've already got half a poem in my head, but we're going to wait till next
week. That's a reason to tune in next week.
Isn't it just?
So we should probably stop there.
I think so.
Thank Lawrence for his time and joining us.
Great. Well, thanks very much, guys. Been an honour to come down to this wonderful new studio and be part of the EG podcast
EG
series.
Tech Talk Radio.
Sorry.
Or TTR. We've got about 17 names.
We've got about 17 names. And thank you so much for coming. And next time you can come and do some hip-hop DJing.
Let's do it. I'll do the theme tune if you want.
Brilliant.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.